Blog Talk Radio.
Each day do you wake up and get out of bed? You got all these feelings rushing round in your head. You got that bout with doubt and neighbors singing the blues. Pick up the paper and it's all bad news. But you know in the end, happiness is your best friend. You can be what you wanna be. Oh, dare to step high and live like you're free. I said color, color your life happy. Color, every day you can choose. Color, color your life happy. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
The difference between try and triumph is a little funky. We all have ups and downs, but you can still be happy. If you're gonna step, you might as well step high.
If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
ColorYourLifeHappy.com. Get your happy on.
Good morning, this is Flora welcoming you to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, September 14th. I'm your host, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our show today will be a pre-recorded interview. I was interviewed on Labor Day by Patricia Nan Anderson, and she has a show up in Seattle called Parenting, a Field Guide. So I want you to relax and listen to the thoughts I shared with Dr. Anderson about happiness and parenting. If you are online and want to come into the chat room, I'll be there, but you won't be able to call in while the pre-recorded show is going on. So let's relax and listen to an informative, inspiring, and encouraging interview. Parenting Field Guide Interview.
It's time for Parenting a Field Guide Live. I'm your host, Dr. Patricia Nan Anderson, and today we're talking about happiness. Hey, Billy, are you happy today?
I'm very happy.
Excellent. It's kind of gloomy and windy out here, but I mean, if you can be happy today, I think you can be happy any day.
Well, you know, for everybody who's enjoying this Labor Day, and how can you not have a great day when
you're driving, there's no traffic. You're happy.
Everybody's happy today.
That's right, exactly. Well, my guest today is Dr. Flora Morris Brown. She is the author of a new book called Color Your Life Happy. Now, at the end of the hour, Dr. Brown will respond to your questions. So be ready to call in later at 1-425-373-5527 or 298-5569. That's 1-888-298-5569. Welcome, Flora. We're waiting for her. She's going to come in a minute. She's dialing in from San Francisco. It's a long way for those passenger pigeons to fly. Oh, there she is. Welcome, Flora. We thought you were
we were missing,
you know, we know you have bridge problems there in San Francisco. We were hoping you weren't having bridge line problems as well. How are you today?
I'm great, and actually I'm down in Southern California. No bridges there.
Oh, no, you just have smoke down there. All right.
Yes, thank God I'm not near the smoke, but yes, there is smoke down here somewhere.
Somewhere there is. Flora, we're going to talk about happiness today. Thank you so much for being on the show. Tell me, have you always been a happy person?
Yes, I have. But I didn't always know I deserved to be happy. And I didn't know that when I was a child that maintaining my happiness was my responsibility. I had to learn about that. Like so many, I had to learn that happiness is really from the inside out. So I spent a little too much time in childhood trying to please others or looking for validation. But deep inside, I always had a sense of self. Fortunately, I observed people a lot and sort of created my philosophy of life and my way of living based on other people. I believe that it's better to let other people make the mistakes if possible and not have to do them all yourself. But I think as a child, my mother was very proud of me, but she stressed modesty so much that I grew up downplaying my strengths and talents, and it wasn't always popular to run around being happy.
You know, I think that's a common experience, you know, raised with that sort of... whatever you want to call it, some sort of you know, don't think too much of yourself, don't put on airs, don't over promote, and you know, there is a, kids are naturally outgoing and naturally they want to tell you everything. You know, you walk up to a 4-year old, they want to tell you their name and their age and everything about them, and that gets squelched a little bit, and that squelching kind of sticks with us, doesn't it?
It does, and it's unfortunate that it sticks with some people never get past it. And it's certainly unfortunate because children typically are born with such honesty and straightforwardness, and it's just a joy for living. I mean, if you ever watch a kid walking down the street, they skip over, well, they skip in puddles, and they walk on cracks, and they just have a gay time. And unfortunately, we kind of well, that play, that need for play, that's part of being happy.
We get too serious. You said something earlier that caught my eye, responsibility, that we are responsible for our own happiness, and it's,
that's right.
It's nobody, no one else is charged with making us happy. That's... Talk about that. That's an interesting thought. That, again, can be a new thought for some of us.
Well, because the things that are going to happen in the world happen. We don't have control over the outside circumstances, but we do have responsibility for how we react to those circumstances. You've heard many people blame situations on other people. They'll say, she made me do it, or he made me so. This is what abusers like to say. She made me so angry that it made me attack her.
Right.
And the truth is they totally have displaced their responsibility, because you're responsible for how you react to whatever. If you're feeling anger or you're feeling abused or whatever is going on, you're responsible for that. You cannot give that to anybody else. And that's something that when people learn that, then your life can change for the better, because if you realize that you're creating a situation to be a happy situation, or unhappy, you can also turn it around and make it a happy situation.
Right.
And the situation itself hasn't changed. It's how you view it that's changed.
You know, this is making me think of one of the principal researchers, Dr. Martin Seligman, that I know you reference.
Yes.
You reference his work in your book. And he
yes.
started out looking at what he called learned helplessness.
Yes.
The idea that we get into is this thinking of I have no control over my life and I should just
right.
give up. And once he discovered learned helplessness, he did do this kind of looking at the other side of the coin that you're talking about.
Yes.
And wrote about learned optimism, didn't he call that?
Yes. He was looking at the fact that, well, the whole field of psychology up until Martin Seligman started the positive psychology movement, we're looking at all the things that are wrong with us and all the itis, the osis, and the, I call them the osis, the negative, the depression and so
right.
forth. They were studying that for years until they realized, wait, some people actually are happy. Let's look at what qualities they have that's leading to that. But the learned helplessness is a really unfortunate thing that we can do to ourselves in terms of teaching ourselves and others, our children, for example, to be helpless. You know, when you run to help someone do something that they could well do themselves, you're doing them a disservice rather than doing them a favor. You know, it's kind of like that thing about if you want to help someone, instead of giving them a fish, teach them to fish. And then they will be able to fend for themselves the rest of their lives. So that learned helplessness is what so many of us get into, and unless something turns us around, we can go, and it leads to depression and bad feelings because it doesn't feel good
right.
to be dependent on someone and be helpless.
Well, and the whole idea of, you know, I'll be happy when.
When. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll
or
be
if.
Happy. Right, right. Yeah, that's kind of contingency thing. It's rather than being happy no matter what. It's a
mm-hmm.
state of mind.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I said something in my book that I heard from somewhere long ago, and that is, if you can be happy in the future, you can be happy now. And that I...
What are you waiting for?
Yeah, what are you waiting for? And also, it was it applies to situations when something happens. You can, if it's going to be funny later, it's actually funny now. And if you can laugh at it now instead of waiting, because when we look back in retrospect, one thing I put in my book throughout was what I called happiness flashbacks. And these were episodes with my children, things that happened over the years that are really funny. Now, they weren't always as funny when they happened.
At the time.
At the time. But if you can keep in mind that if it's going to be funny later, it's actually funny now, then it changes your whole outlook and makes your life so much easier. And I'll give you an example. One of the, we loved to cook when my kids were young. I had our kitchen remodeled so we could all work around this work island for homework and for cooking. And we cooked a lot. So we made Christmas cookies every year, and we would give them to our neighbors and friends as gifts in those little cute Chinese takeout pails
right.
that they would decorate with holiday themes. And we would make a lot of cookies, about 5 different recipes, and dozens of them. Well, one of the cookies had crushed peppermint in it. And as we were finishing a batch, I grabbed a cookie to do my quality testing, you know, and I bit into it, and I tasted this pepperminty flavor, but when I pulled the cookie away from my mouth, I got this long string of gum.
Oh, no.
And
it was peppermint gum?
Oh, my God. Who dropped gum in the batter? Of course, nobody knew. I have 4 children. Nobody there knew what had happened.
Oh, it was just one wad?
One wad of chewing of some peppermint bubble gum. And that, or at least it tastes kind of pepperminty. But it was mixed with the peppermint, I guess, that we crushed, right? And I was mortified because we're packaging these up in cute little with tissue and, you know, a little cute packaging.
A
and we're about to
from
give
our
them to
family
people.
To yours, right.
Exactly. And I was like, oh, my, I can't believe this. And, of course, then when you're raising children, you're kind of afraid to laugh at this because you don't want to condone it and make them think it's okay. But it was funny.
Yep.
And it's even funnier and funnier. And I still have not found out who was the culprit. But it was funny. And so a number of things happen like that, and if we can laugh at them when they occur, we can diffuse the situation and turn what could become an ugly situation into not only a good situation, but we turn it into a learning experience for our children.
Right. Right, the whole how do you handle adversity? How do you handle, you know, it is everything so deadly serious and important that we have to rant and rave over it, or could we actually laugh and enjoy the moment and say, well, that was the goofiest thing. It's a good thing Mom got that cookie, because probably all the rest of them are okay.
I was praying.
No.
I was praying. And all the rest were okay.
Well, how did you come to this point in your life? How did you come to choose happiness as a career, as the focus of your book, Color Your Life Happy? How did you get here?
Well, very interesting. That's an interesting story, because I wasn't aware that I was headed that way with my book. But I'll tell you the background of growing up. I think part of what laid the foundation was that my mother had a home-based beauty shop. back in Missouri, and in those days, people who own their own businesses would often have their business in the front room and the family would live in the back. And so that's the way I grew up, in a beauty shop, essentially. Instead of a living room, we had a beauty shop.
Right.
And then we had those nice, what do they call them, pocket doors between that and the bedroom so we could close it, and so we had the house. Well, I grew up listening to all these women over many, many years share their stories with my mother, and I became very interested in observing people, not only just in that setting everywhere I went, but I was always observing and listening. And as I listened to these women, I started to create my life script. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I would listen to some of the women that who would have husbands who would not let them have any control of the money except for their grocery bill or grocery money, and they would count on my mother to be like a banker. So they would, you know, pull out a few dollars out of their grocery money and have my mother save it for them. And I would listen to these women and think, what kind of marriage is that where you can't share with your husband what you have, or, you know, all this secrecy, or women who were afraid of their husbands for many other reasons. And I began to think about how I wanted my life to be and make decisions about it. Well, as I continued to grow more and more, I heard people say things that indicated that they didn't think they had a choice. And many times people would tell me, when I would achieve something or complete something, even as a kid, they would say, wow, you're so lucky.
Oh, yes.
And I just grew up hating that word, lucky. I had to do all this, and that work to get that scholarship or whatever. And I realized more and more that many people really believed deep in their hearts that somehow or another they weren't entitled, that they didn't have a choice. Well, when I fast forward to when I retired from my teaching career, one of my goals was to travel the world, and the other one was to write a book. Well, I thought I was going to write my life story so that I could leave it behind for my children. And I had that in the back of my head, but I hadn't gotten started, but I was just trying to formulate how this life story is going to go. Well, one day, I was listening to Joel Osteen, the pastor from Texas who has a television ministry.
Right.
And he was talking about claiming your joy. At the same time I was listening to him, I was multitasking, and I was looking in a catalog of promotional gift items that you can purchase for your business. And I saw a box of crayons in there. And I was amazed that, wow, you can order crayons and have your company
name. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Imprinted. And I was thinking, that'll be cool. And I was planning to have a speaking career now that I was retired, but I didn't know what my topic was going to be exactly, other than, you know, to motivate people. Well, somewhere in the mix in my head of listening to Joel Osteen keep saying, people need to learn to claim their joy. Don't let anyone steal your joy. And as he was saying that, and I'm looking at the crayon, suddenly the idea came in my head, yes, people need to learn to color their lives happy. They have control. God has given us all the colors to work with. We just have to, and I just kept having this thought.
You just have to pick up your crayon box and start using those colors.
And start using those colors.
That's great.
And I went immediately to the Internet to see if that domain name was
right. Hey. We're ruled by domain names, aren't we?
Yes.
That's right.
And even though I didn't know what I was going to create as far as a blog or newsletter, or I'm sorry, a website, and I didn't have the book in my mind either yet. I just knew that Color Your Life Happy sounded like a great title to something. So that's where I
that whole kind of letting the path open up in front of you, I think is one of the keys to happiness, is one of the things that you focus in your book. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
You're listening to Parenting Field Guide Live. I'm Dr. Patricia Ann Anderson, and we are talking with Dr. Flora Morris Brown about happiness And we're going to be right back.
And I'm Sean Denae Eddy.
We are excited to invite you to listen to the I'm Thankful Network.
Radio for inspiration,
education,
and collaboration.
Each Monday through Friday, we will feature dynamic women.
Hi, I'm Keisha Ewers, medical director and founder of Fern Life Center and your wellness coach for a healthy you. I'll be live every Wednesday on the call-in show that teaches you to take care of you.
So tune in Monday through Friday.
That's 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Alternative Talk Radio 1150.
Did you know Dr. Anderson offers a complete package of free and affordable services for parents on her website at patricianannanderson.com? On the services page, click on coaching, then the parent vibe for programs aimed at the everyday concerns of parents and children from babies to adults. In addition, parents in divorce, grandparents, and parents of children with special needs all will find resources at the parent vibe at patricianannanderson.com. Or at patricianannanderson.com, click on services, then coaching, then the pregnant parent, and enroll in the online courses for expectant and adopting parents. This course makes a super gift for a baby shower. There's a free weekly teleconference too. While you're at patricianannanderson.com, be sure to sign up for her newsletter and read her blog. Keep in touch and get the support you need at patricianannanderson.com.
Parenting a Field Guide Live. I'm your host, Dr. Patricia Ann Anderson, and I am talking with Dr. Flora Morris Brown about happiness. Remember, if you have a question for Dr. Brown, you'll have a chance to ask those near the end of the hour. At that time, you'll be able to call in at 1-425-7... See, I cannot do numbers today. Must be something with the weather. Let me try this again. 1-425-373-5527, or if you're out of the Puget Sound area, 1-888-298-5569. Dr. Brown is the author of the new book, Color Your Life Happy. Flora, tell us, how can listeners get a copy of your book?
Okay, listeners have several choices. They can go to Amazon.com or any of the other major bookstores' websites or in the bookstore. But if they want an autographed copy of the book, they need to go to my website, ColorYourLifeHappy.com, where when they order there, I will autograph the book before it goes out. So they have a number of ways of getting it.
Excellent, excellent. You were talking as we were getting to the break about that URL, and you know, coloryourlifehappy.com. Excellent.
Yes.
So Flora, tell us, what does it take to have a quote-unquote happy family?
A happy family?
Yeah.
First, you need some happy parents. That's the first ingredient. And a lot of parents, unfortunately, or couples think that when they become parents, they're going to magically be transported into this happy state. But it really helps to be happy first as people, and then that enables you to bring to your children already the positive attitudes and the strength that they're going to need to then raise their children properly. So first is happy parents, and then happy parents are going to have already in place good habits, certain habits that are nurturing for each other as a couple, and then, of course, for their children. So that's the first key. I think also to create a happy family, you need to have respect for one another. You need to listen to one another, husband to husband, parents to children. And you need to set boundaries because one of the things that people tend to do is want to go to one extreme or the other. They want to be extremely controlling to make sure everything is in place, and they want to shield their children from the horrors of the world. Or you have parents on the other end who perhaps were raised in very strict settings. So they're going to fix that now by giving their children unlimited freedom. Neither of those models is a good idea.
Neither one really works, does it? No.
They don't lead to happiness. They don't lead to happiness immediately, but given that we do have a choice, even people who are raised in either of those extremes or any other situation can choose happiness for themselves later when they are able to physically and emotionally and psychologically leave that family. But if you're starting off with the intent of having a happy family, then you really need to be happy yourself as a person. And some people, especially in my upbringing, felt that if you were happy, you were being selfish. If you were doing good things for yourself, you're being selfish. But actually, how can you help someone else be what you yourself haven't become?
Oh, that's a key point, isn't it? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. We can't have happy children if we don't let them be happy.
Exactly. And don't model happiness for them so they know what that looks like.
Yeah. A few minutes ago, you used the word habit, and that caught my attention. Happiness as a habit.
Yes.
Go ahead and
figure out what things lead to your happiness, and there's some common elements that lead to everyone's happiness, but within there, of course, are your personal preferences. Once we find out what those are and we make them a habit by doing them over and over, habit is something that after you do it consistently for 21 days, it becomes automatic, then we can have this happiness. And you want me to go over what some of those things are?
Please do, sure.
Whether you're a parent or not.
Yeah.
One of the things is some kind of belief in a higher power. Now, the higher power bothers some people because they think, well, they don't believe in God. Well, you don't have to call the higher power God. You can call the higher power whatever you want. Call it General Motors. Because when you get in your car, for example, you definitely believe in some kind of power beyond yourself because you trust whoever designed that car, the people who assembled it, and all the people driving around you. You're trusting that you're going to be able to navigate that road and come out alive when you get to your destination.
Or you're believing in the power of cooperation of other drivers, that everyone's going to stay in their
exactly.
own lane. And right, okay. Yeah, I got
you. But you're believing even in the power of the people who created the car who aren't physically mm-hmm. there. So you are believing in some kind of power. But to me, that is one of the key things. You also have to be able to get in touch with your inner voice, because we all have voices inside of us, whether we want to admit it or not, and we can't hear them unless we get quiet. So in some part of your life, you have to create a quietness, and some people want to call that meditation, some people want to call it prayer, whatever, just sitting still. Somehow you have to have that. And then an extremely important part of happiness is finding something you enjoy doing so much that you would do it free. And many times there are things, our work that we are doing and we're so passionate about that we don't think of it as work. Some people find that outside of their job. Some people merge the job and this passion. Another thing we need to do is practice gratitude. Zig Ziglar is a famous motivational speaker, and he said that the best way to get everything you want in life is to help enough other people get what they want. When you're reaching out and helping people and showing your gratitude to people who help you, showing your gratitude to the things you have, for the things you have, you are creating happiness right there. And if you make that a habit, then it becomes so much easier for your entire life. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you're saying that if we... if we focus on making the people around us happy,
mm-hmm.
and we mean a true happiness, not just giving them everything they want. We're talking about our children now. The happiness is different from being spoiled. That makes us happy, and we all rise in that effort. And I think that's true. I definitely.
Well, you know what? The things we can help people with most, and that we can give most, are the things that don't cost anything.
Yes.
This is one
happiness
of the,
is free, isn't it?
It's free. And what people want most, children and adults, what we all want most is to be known, to be understood, to be listened to be valued. And we doctor, I don't remember the name, where they removed a fence from around an elementary school. They felt that if the kids had this open area to play in with no fence, that they would feel freer and that somehow that would be a better thing. Well, what do you suppose happened?
They all clustered closer to the school?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It was frightening because there was no boundary as to where the schoolyard ended and the street began. And it was scary and they were fearful. So we definitely benefit from having boundaries. And, of course, it doesn't mean harsh, you know, punishment or whatever, but we do need to have boundaries. And one of the interesting things about raising children is they buck against those boundaries. They complain, they gripe, but they love them. My youngest daughter told me one time that, I forgot how old she was, junior high, I think, and she said, "Mom, you need to go down the street and talk to so-and-so's mother because she doesn't know how to be a parent."
Oh.
She just lets her daughter do anything and everything, and you really need to go and talk to her. I said, "Wait a minute. Me, the evil, cruel parent who sets rules and guidelines?" She said, "Yes, because you know how to be a parent." So I told her, "Well, I can't exactly go down there and tell that mother how to be a mother." But even though my daughter, from very early on, always wanted to buck and challenge and question my rules and guidelines, she really appreciates
them.
Yeah,
she appreciates. She saw the value.
She appreciates them.
And saw the danger for a kid who doesn't have that.
Yes, it's scary.
Yeah.
It's scary. So we're not doing them a favor. But we can only set those boundaries, I believe, if we are clear on who we are and feel some kind of sense of self-acceptance, have some kind of purpose that, for which we're living, then I think it's easier to set those boundaries because we set them for ourselves.
Right. And the boundaries in the context of what you said earlier, respectful, supportive, nurturing, kind of the whole warmth and control kind of paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
You write in your book, give up the fantasy of being the perfect parent. We all have that fantasy, right? We're going to do it right, you know? We see other people's kids, and we're going to improve on that. The fantasy, are we holding ourselves to too high a standard sometimes?
We're holding ourselves to a false standard because I grew up watching Ozzie and Harriet.
Oh, sure.
So I've just dated myself.
You
Ozzie
and me both,
and Harriet,
right.
And Father Knows Best and all of
Leave
those
it shows. To Beaver.
Leave It to Beaver, My Three Sons, on and on. Okay, those shows were fictional.
Fictional. Oh, key word, right.
They were fictional. They were written by writers. Those actual people, let's take Ozzie and Harriet, for example. That was their real-life family, but
right.
The situations were fictional. In their real life, they had ups and downs and challenges with their children, with drugs and so forth, as we know.
Yeah.
So watching those people, I got a false idea of how parenting will be like many others. Soon I found out that, that's not the way it is.
Not all problems are fixed in 30 minutes, right, between the commercials, right. Yeah.
So that fantasy will keep a lot of us prisoner if we as parents try to be perfect. There is no perfect parent and no perfect child. What is good is to be able to see your child as a person, which is sometimes hard for parents to do.
Right.
They are a person separate from you. You were given the gift of this child to raise. And it may be that there are many aspects of this child that you don't understand and don't know and don't recognize because we're all made up of all that DNA that stretches back to the beginning of time. And who knows what's all in that mix? We don't know. So I think looking at our children as perfect as they already are and wonderful in their uniqueness is one of the things that will most help us become, quote-unquote, perfect parents. but there's certainly no such thing. And as our children are evolving and growing, so are we.
And part of the, you know, kind of a recipe for being unhappy is to try to be something that's impossible.
It's impossible. And
yeah.
I'll give you an example from my first, when I had my first baby, when I hired a babysitter who was going to come to my house and babysit and do some light housekeeping. I made this list of things for her to do. And, of course, my first child. So I had read Dr. Seuss. I had created my nursery. I even went and learned how to knit so I could knit little things. I tried to do the whole little mom thing. I even tried to be a stay-at-home mom for a while. I had been teaching 2 years before I got married and had children. I tried to be a little stay-at-home mom. It just did not work for me. But back to the babysitter, she was an older lady who did not need the money per se but enjoyed babysitting. And she must have had a good laugh at me after I left her this long list of things that first day. And she was very respectful, though, because she didn't tell me, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm not doing this stuff. She was very cordial, and I went on my way. And I soon realized after a little while that I didn't need to give her instruction, that she knew what to do. That she was completely in charge of my baby when I was gone, and that I hired her based on her instincts and what I felt she had as to give. So I kind of got over that.
And also the parenting can't be scripted.
No.
You can't work off a list and just kind of go through the day and check it off, because there is this other person, the baby or the child involved, and they have their own checklist. It may not be as explicit as a checklist we've written off, but it is an interaction. It's not a one-sided conversation.
Of the fact that you do have to play it by ear, it is important to have your own happiness and confidence, because that will keep you grounded as you play it by ear, because that's essentially what you're doing. As you said, there's no script. It's like, what do they call it, impromptu theater?
Right, improvisation, right.
Improvisation.
Yeah.
It's very much so, no matter what your experience. And then just when you think you have figured it out, you have your second child, and here comes
all
another
different.
Person.
Right.
All different. Everything
right.
that worked in the first one that you figured out, uh-oh, different person. Different scripts or different challenges, whatever you did before is not going to assure you that you're going to be able to do the same. So each child, I had four wonderful learning experiences with those children. And then I have three grandchildren.
It's a whole different thing.
Each of them is different.
And so what I'm hearing you saying is that being a parent has this improvisational quality. We have to respond to the children. But that if we're coming at that from a choice of happiness and seeing the happiness and the positive, rather than coming at that from a choice of control and trying to, you know, pick apart what's going wrong, that we are better off and our kids will be happier and we'll be happier and things will be smoother. It's that improvisation, but also it's the attitude you improvise off of that is a key piece.
Yes, very much so.
Oh, that's a powerful thing. That's excellent. And we want to know more about this. We're going to hear some more, but we need to take another break.
Okay.
I am talking with Dr. Flora Morris Brown, author of the new book, Color Your Life Happy. When we come back, Dr. Brown will take your questions. So call now at 1-425-373-5527 or 1-888-298-5569. This is Parenting a Field Guide Live. I'm Dr. Patricia Ann Anderson, and we will be right back.
Do you have have your copy of Dr. Anderson's book, Parenting, A Field Guide? Packed into its 325 pages are the key ideas you need for raising successful, well-adjusted, and confident kids. Information is arranged in a quick-read format that fits your busy schedule. This book will be your go-to resource for your everyday problems and concerns we all have in raising a child. Get your copy today at major booksellers, including Barnes & Noble, or help local charities by ordering direct from parentingafieldguide.com. 10% of online sales go directly to nonprofits that help families and children. Parenting, A Field Guide by Dr. Patricia Nan Anderson is now available. Get your copy today.
Hi, I'm Sue Lundquist.
And I'm Sean Denae Eddy.
We are excited to invite you to listen to the I'm Thankful Network.
Radio for inspiration,
education,
and collaboration.
Each Monday through Friday, we will feature dynamic women
to inspire, educate, and collaborate with you.
So tune in Monday through Friday.
That's 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Alternative Talk Radio 1150.
Or catch us live streaming on imthankful.com.
Is there a book in you? Dr. Anderson had one. She got it written and published and on the shelves of bookstores everywhere. And you can too. Let Dr. Anderson show you how. If you put off writing a book because it seems so difficult, let Dr. Anderson be your guide. Whether you're thinking of writing a novel, a children's book, a cookbook, or nonfiction, Dr. Anderson can help you get it written and get it published in under a year. You don't have to be a great writer, and you don't have to have any big credentials. You can do this just as you are. You just need an ally. You just need a nudge. For more information, go to ineedanudge.com. Dr. Anderson's website for everyone with something to accomplish and no time to do it. There is a book in you. You just need a nudge to get it out. Go to ineedanudge.com.
Dr. Flora Morris Brown, author of Color Your Life Happy. Dr. Brown is ready to take your questions, so call now at 1-425-373-5527 or 1-888-298-5569. Flora, I have some questions. So is there a way of measuring happiness? Let's get back to the scientific part of this. Have scientists come up with a way to actually, you know, is there a happiness quotient kind of thing?
Not so much a quotient per se as there is a, what they're doing, a lot of research is asking people how they feel or measuring various reactions to various things. And each of these research is really interesting research that they're doing. There, many of them are studying very, very small aspects of happiness. They're coming up with kind of a list of things that people who report to be happy seem to have in place in their lives. So rather than a quotient per se, they've said that people who say they're happy tend to have... Typically have some kind of... close family relations, they're content with the work they do, they have a sense of life purpose, they volunteer their time, they show gratitude, and they practice some kind of quietness, meditation, whatever you want to call it, getting still. So they kind of have a list of things that seem to be common across the board when people report being happy.
You know, I was, I can't remember now the title of a book that I was reading, but it was something about the geography of happiness or something. And,
Yes.
Is that the title? I have no idea. But
the geography of bliss.
That's it.
I believe it. Mm-hmm.
But there's like a country, is it Bhutan, that has, they measure the gross national happiness instead of gross national product?
National product. And that's something that our country would like to get to. I heard one of the speakers at, I went to a conference, a positive psychology conference. And they would like to get to that point of, you know, every day the president gets briefed on the economy and so forth.
Right.
They would like to...
But what's really important? How happy are we? Right.
How and what kind of things can we do to increase happiness? For example, some of the research they're doing, is they're looking at things like work setting.
Mm.
And they found that having sunlight or green plants.
Okay, right.
Or various things of that nature.
Simple stuff, right.
Simple stuff, or having water, some kind of water in the, matter of fact, some hotels at one point were experimenting with the idea of giving people a bowl of fish, a fish bowl with a goldfish in it when they came to the stay, and they would carry that to their room. And so if the research shows that certain things in certain settings create a better mood and disposition and more productivity among workers, then this is the kind of thing that would be great to have put in place as buildings are being built, as societies are being created, neighborhoods,
schools,
all of these
right.
things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Huh.
So there are some findings that they would like to. I didn't realize how broad and global the results could be used. I was thinking in terms of personal happiness at first, but now that I've attended these conferences, they have a much broader goal than just helping individuals become happier. They also want to be able to affect the way we do society so that we, as we create these various companies and neighborhoods and so forth, we can instill things and install things
right.
that have been shown to lighten mood.
Promote,
even the colors of the wall, music that's piped in, if they have music. A lot of things can be done in settings to help facilitate.
That's
happiness.
Fascinating, isn't it? When you stop and think about your own situation, you know,
mm-hmm.
where you like to work,
mm-hmm.
Where you feel the most productive, the kinds of rhythms in your day.
Exactly.
Yeah, you can see that definitely does have an effect. And again,
certainly.
If you're trying to promote your own happiness, paying attention to those things and putting those in rather than just saying, well, wow, I'm happy right now, you know.
And those things can be subtle because the workers that are involved in companies may or may not even realize how these things are affecting them. And yet, as they discover what things tend to affect people across the board, they can put these in place, and that's wonderful. That's a wonderful idea.
I mean, I think we've, as a nation, we've sort of had a problem with a right to be happy. I mean, we talk about the pursuit of happiness as
mm-hmm.
as an inalienable right, but we're a little suspicious about the the self-centeredness of focusing on being happy.
Yeah.
You know, we like to sort of find, you know, apply happiness to, you know, assign it an economic value. That this
yes.
would be better in the workplace. We would get more work out of our workers if we could,
yes.
you know, give them natural light and, you know, whatever.
Yes.
I mean, can we uncouple happiness from this kind of external, you know, kind of reward system thing?
Well, it's tough to get any government funding or any corporate funding if you uncouple it, I tell
yeah.
you that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's because I asked that question at the conference of one of the key speakers, this professor whose nickname is Dr. Happiness. I talked to him about the research, and I told him, I said, some of this research sounds like what my grandmother told me. And so why do we need to do research on some of these findings? And he said, because people trust numbers.
Mm.
People do not respect information.
What your grandmother told you, right.
Yeah. They, until it's been proven somehow, some way, they've conducted some kind of research, people trust numbers. And that's what they're trying to do, is to quantify and get on paper and in some kind of way that the scientific world can respect it. They're trying to get that done so that they can bring in effect the things that our grandmothers have already told us a long time ago.
Well, you and I, we don't need to wait for the scientists, though, do we?
Nope.
And our listeners don't need to wait. We could put in place what we know to be true from our own experience today.
Yeah.
And choose happiness and do the things that make us happy. Stay away from people that make us unhappy?
Yes, stay away from people that make you unhappy to the extent that you can. Some of those people have names like mom, dad, sister, uncle,
mm-hmm.
and they're
right.
in our family. And the extent to which you have to stay away from them depends on your own strength and how much exposure you can take. But if the family, if that those people, regardless of who they are toxic, you have to definitely draw the line. And I mentioned that in my chapter on balancing family and work. When you love your family, you have to protect them from toxic people because it will have an influence. And unfortunately, it takes a while. I mean, some people believe that family is right no matter what, but that's not always true. So you have to create environments, situations that put you with other people that are like you want to be or like you are, not with people who are working against your happiness and your contentment.
Right.
So that's extremely important for us as parents and for people, very much so. I want to say something about the pursuit of happiness. I read or heard Marcy Shimoff, who wrote the Happy for No Reason, and she mentioned that in the Constitution, the pursuit of happiness really doesn't mean going after. That pursuit in those days meant practice. The practice of happiness. Practicing happiness.
The practice of happiness.
Yes. And we also have to remember that in that context, the government that was in place at that time was not necessarily talking to every person, although they said every person.
No, of course not.
But you got to remember that, well, I'm African American, so during that time I was not considered a person.
No, and
nor
we're women. We're both
really.
Women, so, right. That's, yeah, we're off the list also.
So even though it sounds like it's talking to everybody, in reality, you had, you know, slave owners writing this thing. So we have the practice of happiness that we are entitled to, and now we include ourselves in the we. But it's not frivolous. It's not self-centered. It's not necessarily pro-social, though. It's not necessarily, because one of the problems with demonstrating your happiness is it's not always that popular. If you're standing around the water cooler...
The happiest person in the work group, you're right.
And people are talking, griping about the government and the president and the health reform, and they're just griping. And you come stepping in with, good morning, how are you? I'm so happy today. You know, chances are you're going to be ostracized. At best.
we have that, you know, the term Pollyanna for the person that is irrepressibly happy, and that's a pejorative term. And
yes.
And that's interesting in itself, isn't it? That we really can't stand people who practice happiness all the
time.
Well,
and it's interesting because there are people who are sad, depressed, and aren't ready to embrace happiness. And I'll give you an example. My pastor mentioned that when she was doing her some kind of residency or internship at a hospital, they told her, they outlawed her from going to the ward where they had severely depressed people because she was so upbeat. And the gap between where she was and where these people were at that time was too wide.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. And so when... you're working with people who are stuck deep into their depression or their stuff or whatever, they aren't going to be able to receive what you're talking about because it's too, the gap is too wide.
Too distant.
Yes.
Which kind of goes back, I think, if I can interject, to that whole parenting scenario, that this is an interaction and you're respectful of the other person.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for example, if you have a really dark teenager, you know, someone who's seeing the evils of society and can't see a rosy future as some of our teens do, insisting that they be upbeat is you're not really being respectful of this person's position, and you're not really meeting them where they are and helping them along. You're sort of the contrast is too big.
Yeah, I think one of the things that kids often complain especially teenagers, is you don't understand me.
Right.
And they are right. But also they're saying you aren't listening to my needs. You aren't hearing
right
where I'm hurting. And regardless of whether we as parents you understand the full extent of it, I remember my oldest daughter wrote me a letter when she was 15 or so saying that she knew that we loved her, but she had to learn to love herself. And she had left that note on the refrigerator on a Christmas morning, and we didn't know where she
was. Wow, wow.
And I had company coming for Christmas brunch.
Right.
And I had this full meal prepared and all to open the presents, and I had to have within me this realization that this child we loved and just could not understand why she's
right.
having this problem finding herself, as they say.
So
we didn't even know where she was.
Happened.
She left.
I'm going to have to interject
okay.
here and kind of wrap us up because we could talk about this forever.
Forever.
But the idea is that happiness is an attainable state, but you can't legislate it. Each
nope.
person has to develop it. We're all going to
yeah.
go out and develop some happiness today. Today's
oh,
a good day.
Great.
It's a holiday. Well, let's do that. Dr. Brown, if listeners have questions for you, how can they get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me at flora@coloryourlifehappy.com.
Fabulous.
Easy.
Fabulous. And the book, Color Your Life Happy, is available everywhere and also
That's
on
right.
coloryourlifehappy.com
That's
where we
correct.
Can get our autograph copy. Sounds good. We have come to the end of a delightful conversation. Thank you so much, Dr. Flora Morris Brown. This program will be available probably later today on ParentingAfieldGuideLive.com. But you know it's a holiday, so if it's not up till tomorrow, just be patient. It'll be there. Listen tomorrow on the I'm Thankful Network right here, same time, when Sue and Sean's guest will be astrologer and clairvoyant Margaret McElroy. And tune in again next Monday. My guest will be Sam Apple, author of American Parent. Sam will talk about adjusting to being a dad of a newborn and all the silliness and seriousness that goes along with that. In the meantime, please remember... Every good thing that happens between us happens first at home. Have a wonderful week, everybody.